I've given this important decision the most careful consideration.
I will do my best to earn Minnesotans' support. And I believe the way to do that is by being the best senator that I can be.
From Minnesota to Washington, D.C., Governor Dayton chose his Lieutenant Governor, Tina Smith, to take over the U.S. Senate seat being vacated by Senator Al Franken. Franken is resigning amid sexual misconduct allegations by at least 8 women. Hello, I'm Tom Hauser. Not only is Tina Smith taking over the seat, she also plans to run for it again in November during a special election. Democrats in Washington see this not only as a chance to keep both Minnesota's Senate seats in their control, but also as a chance to take control of the full Senate. Smith says she's ready for the biggest challenge of her career.
Good morning, and thank you very much, Governor Dayton, wherever you are. There you are.
That's one of the few times Tina Smith and Governor Dayton haven't been in complete lockstep. As his chief of staff for nearly 4 years and lieutenant governor the past 3 years, she's been a key player in the Dayton administration. Now, Tina Smith is about to go to Washington.
It will be my great honor to serve Minnesota as United States Senator.
That also means the 59-year-old Smith will be stepping out of the shadow of Governor Dayton.
Now, my job will be to go to Washington, D.C. to continue working on behalf of Minnesota and our country. And I will do this in my own way, using my own best judgment and experience, but always with the people of Minnesota in mind.
Dayton says he chose Smith on his own, although Senate Democratic leader Chuck Schumer of New York had input on one aspect of the choice.
He did believe that, the person should run for the office next year. You know, he has a strong and legitimate stake in this decision as the Democratic leader.
The race could cost tens of millions of dollars and attract national attention because of the circumstances under which Senator Franken resigned. Smith says she's up to the challenge.
Well, the conversation about campaigns and elections, I want to wait for another day, but I can tell you I shouldn't be underestimated, and if I weren't confident, I wouldn't be doing this.
Senator Franken's office says he will leave office in early January. He has continued going about his regular routine since announcing his resignation, including attending committee hearings. That includes this one for the Senate Health, Education, Labor, and Pensions Committee on Tuesday. Governor Dayton's choice of Tina Smith to replace Senator Franken solves one problem, but it creates another. The state constitution says if there's a vacancy in the lieutenant governor's office, the Senate president becomes lieutenant governor. In this case, that's Republican Senator Michelle Fischbach of Painesville. She initially said she wants to do both jobs.
I spoke with the governor briefly. I did tell him that my intent was to serve in both roles.
The president of the Senate becomes the lieutenant governor, and that she cannot hold two offices simultaneously. But I've asked the attorney general for a formal opinion.
On Friday, Senator Fischbach met with the governor over lunch at the governor's residence. Obviously, the governor believes she can only serve as lieutenant governor and not in dual roles. We'll be following developments, of course, in that situation. Back now to Tina Smith. While she's well-known among political insiders, she's not well-known to most Minnesotans. She became lieutenant governor after running with Governor Dayton in 2014. Before that, she worked in key roles with some of Minnesota's best-known politicians. Joe Mazin goes in depth on her political history, her leadership roles, and her neighborhood.
It's named Clancy's. But this butcher shop on Upton Avenue in Minneapolis's Linden Hills neighborhood could be called Cheers.
What's your name?
Because they know everybody's name.
You like to get to know people.
And a half pastrami.
And one person Emil Tombers Kelly knows well is Tina Smith.
She couldn't be any nicer. Lovely lady.
It will be my great honor to serve Minnesota as United States Senator.
Minnesota's next senator is a regular here and lives in the neighborhood.
We're very happy for her.
I am filled with optimism for Minnesota.
Smith was born and raised in New Mexico and attended Stanford University. Just like Ted Danson, a.k.a. Sam Malone.
And I will do my best to earn Minnesotans' support.
Smith came to Minnesota more than 3 decades ago for a job at General Mills, worked as the VP of Planned Parenthood of Minnesota, served as the chief of staff for Minneapolis Mayor R.T. Ryback, followed by Lieutenant Governor, and now big-time senator.
Now my job will be to go to Washington, D.C. to continue working on behalf of Minnesota and our country.
As Tina Smith heads to Washington to work, we already know she can make a marriage work. She and her husband, Archie, have been married for more than 30 years. They have two grown sons.
Cooking that stuff tonight.
Of all the customers at this butcher shop,
have a good rest of the day.
One regular now has a job that's anything but regular.
Couldn't say that I've ever personally known anybody in that high of a political standing.
As she plants her feet in D.C., hopefully Senator Smith doesn't forget her Minnesota roots. In Minneapolis, Joe Mazin, 5 Eyewitness News.
And of course, 5 Eyewitness News will continue to cover Tina Smith's appointment to the U.S. Senate. Look for updates on air and online at KSTP.com.
We want to give you, the American people, a giant tax cut for Christmas. And when I say giant, I mean giant.
That is the hope, anyway, of President Trump and Republicans in Washington, D.C. They are now closer than ever to delivering on that promise and hope to pass a final bill later this week. Minnesota Congressman Eric Paulson played a major role in helping to craft that final deal. He joins us in studio today. Thank you for being here, Congressman.
Good to be with you.
As you look at this bill and the Republicans are selling it to the American people as a huge tax cut and a boost to the economy, why is it that so many polls here in Minnesota and nationally show that a lot of Americans are suspicious of this and think it's going to be tilted more toward the wealthy?
Well, a couple of things. Number one, even when Ronald Reagan passed his tax reforms, it was overwhelmingly the polls thought their taxes, people thought their taxes were going to go up. That's going to be the same situation here as people realize they're going to see more money in their paychecks starting in February. They're going to get tax relief. But even most importantly, this is generational reform that's going to create a more prosperous future for all Minnesotans, whether you're a student getting out of college or making sure your senior is protecting your individual wealth and savings and relying on important government programs. We're going to have a growing competitive economy with more wages, more jobs, and that's what reform is really about.
We'll talk more about that in a moment, but in terms of the impact on Minnesotans, there's been a lot of concern because we're a relatively high tax state.
Right.
There was concern about the deductibility of state and local taxes. Where does that stand in the bill that is likely to be on the floor next week?
Right. So the modification is we'll have a $10,000 deduction for your property taxes and state and local deductions as a part of that. So there's some flexibility there. But also with all of the rates coming down, the brackets getting widened, everyone is going to see tax relief regardless of that deduction that changes a little bit, but we're going to have it modified and helping Minnesotans.
So instead of being able to deduct all of your property taxes and state taxes, there will be a $10,000 cap on that.
Correct.
So in some people that might be enough, but some people who maybe owe $15,000 in state and local taxes will be able to deduct $10,000 of it.
Correct, $10,000 cap, but those folks also will have lower rates and they'll be in a lower tax category, so they wouldn't have to pay as many taxes in the first place.
One big concern, especially in the among home builders and the real estate industry,
right,
was the cap on the mortgage interest deduction. Initially, I think it was the House bill that had it at $500,000 cap. That's been raised to $750,000. Some didn't think there should be a cap. Are you happy with that compromise?
We're happy where it's at. The realtors are supportive. The home builders are supportive. It's at $750,000. We also restored home medical care deductions. And we also, importantly, as I called on behalf of all the conference committee members and my chairman, restoring the education deductions and credits that are available for Minnesota students, home, you know, whether it's your student loan deductions or other credits to go to college.
Let's take a look at a graphic that shows some of the details of this so people have a better idea of what is in the bill. Again, as it stands right now, you can see it's going to eliminate the health insurance mandate, which is a big issue, expands state and local tax deduction to include the income tax, repeals the corporate alternative minimum tax, and again, as you talked about, some of the school tuition tax breaks. Let's talk about the health insurance mandate for a moment. Does that mean a lot of people are just not going to buy health insurance and it's going to make the health insurance issue even more difficult?
I don't think it really will. On average right now in Minnesota, 79% of the folks that are paying this penalty for not having health insurance fall in the income category of $50,000 or below. So that's been penalizing low and middle income people. This is going to give relief to those folks. And I think hopefully down the long run, as we reorient on health care, Minnesota ties that conversation, we'll be able to address and fix some of those issues. But tax reform itself is going to be separate from that.
Now, you talked earlier about how this was going to boost the economy, wage growth would go up, job creation. Critics of this say there's not always a lot of evidence of that. I mean, even right now, corporations are sitting on literally trillions of dollars in funds that they haven't spent and reinvested in their businesses. What makes you think that by cutting the corporate tax rate from 35% to 21%, they're going to use that to boost wages and create jobs and reinvest in their businesses.
Well, one thing I do is pretty clear. We're losing companies, including from Minnesota, American companies moving their jobs overseas, moving their research, moving their innovation all offshore. We now have changed the international tax laws, and part of this reform, they're going to bring their earnings home. We're going to be able to keep those dollars here in Minnesota, here in America. That means more jobs. They'll reinvest not only in more dollars in their paychecks for their employees, but also retraining employees for the next wave of the future, whatever the economy is going. So it's about 20,000 new jobs in the state of Minnesota, a million jobs nationwide, more dollars in everyone's paycheck. That's important for growth.
And again, people who are concerned about it say, well, how do we know that a lot of this savings is not just going to go to shareholders? What assurances do they have that it will go to boost wages, which have lagged? And one of the things in this economic recovery, wages have not grown very much.
That's right. The status quo is unacceptable. Deficits have risen and continue to rise. This is actually going to get us closer towards a balanced budget. I think we're seeing companies now that have been cautiously optimistic about, as you mentioned, whether it's giving money to their shareholders, but they also want to reinvest in their employees. They want to build their next plant here in the United States. This is going to allow that to happen. That's really important if we're going to have a competitive, growing economy.
It looks like the bill, as it stands now, would add about $1.5 trillion to the deficit if those things don't happen you're talking about in terms of economic growth increasing so much that it makes up for that. Are you confident that it will?
I'm confident we're moving in the right direction because right now we've had static growth of about 2%. As you mentioned earlier, the economic recovery has not been a great recovery for a lot of people. And for the first time, wages fell during a recovery. We've never had that happen in America before. So this reorients it, changes behavior of companies. So we're actually not giving just tax relief, but actually changing the behavior of companies to reinvest people, equipment for the future.
Are you going to feel good about taking this tax bill on the campaign trail in 2018? Is this something that voters in your district are going to see that it benefited them?
Yeah, absolutely. It's once-in-a-generation tax reform, not just tax relief, but tax reform designed to boost our economy. And we need that. If we're going to have better than 2% growth, we get closer to 3%, it improves revenue coming into the federal government, which solves other problems that we have for our spending priorities.
Your name has been floated as a possible candidate for the U.S. Senate to replace Al Franken. Any interest in that job?
No, I'm happy being in the Ways and Means Committee. I'm going to continue working on that in the House, and I'll be supporting our Republican candidate who's lining up for next year.
All right, so no interest in running for the U.S. Senate yourself?
Correct, no.
All right, Congressman Eric Paulson, thanks for coming in and explaining some of this tax bill to us. I know there's still a little fine-tuning to go on before it hits the floors of the House and Senate, but we'll be covering that as well.
Thank We're on schedule.
All right, thank you very much. Up next, Brian Melendez and Annette Meeks will be here for political analysis. Plus, later, see what lawmakers want to do to make it easier to address sexual harassment at the state capitol. At the state capitol, lawmakers are taking steps to make it easier to file sexual harassment claims.
People are coming forward saying, no more. This has to stop.
This workplace has to be a safe place. That's our number one goal.
On Monday, representatives Democrat John Lesch and Republican Marion O'Neill announced proposed House rules changes. They want all complaints sent to the House minority and majority leaders. A timeline would be set for the Ethics Committee to review and rule on claims. Lobbyists and other Capitol employees would be included in the proposal. This follows the resignations of Representative Tony Cornish and Senator Dan Schoen, who faced sexual harassment allegations at the state capitol. And joining me now, Annette Meeks and Brian Melendez, to talk about a lot of the developments in politics here in Minnesota, many of them stemming from sexual harassment allegations, not just at the state capitol, but in the nation's capitol. And Annette, let me start with you. Your thoughts on Governor Dayton's choice of Tina Smith as the replacement for Al Franken. Do you think she is someone that Republicans think they can run a competitive race against?
I think it will be a very competitive race on both sides, both Amy and Tina. It's very unusual to have both seats up at the same time. It makes it very difficult to raise money in the state. They're going to have to spend half of their time. I think it's like $2 million a week, someone figured out, raising that kind of money, traveling all over the country. And when you've never run for office, as Lieutenant Governor Smith has never done, it's very difficult to go out there. You don't come equipped with all of the tools, the staff, and certainly the donor list. She's going to have a big learning curve.
And she did run as lieutenant governor, but again, you're not front and center in a race like you are if you're the main person on the ticket. Brian, you're a former state DFL party chair. Initially, just a month ago, it looked like you would be trying to defend the governor's office, trying to win that again, and Amy Klobuchar's seat, which seemed and might still seem fairly safe. Now all three are in play.
Well, and that makes it tougher for Democrats, especially after the results that we got in the 2016 election cycle. The Democrats lost the legislature. They lost pretty much everywhere that they could have, which may make it a little bit harder to win everything, to run the table again in 2018. But I think we've got some solid candidates, and I think the Democrats stand a chance of running the table.
And the wild card here, of course, is President Trump. How much is he going to be on the ballot in 2018, even though he's not actually on the ballot? Are Minnesota voters, and it's part of the Republicans' job to make this happen, to differentiate Minnesota candidates from President Trump if they're worried about him as being kind of an anchor?
Well, I think it's one of the problems that national Democrats face is they're running against Donald Trump. He was on the ballot last year. He's not going to be on the ballot next year. And they need to develop their own agenda and what they're for versus we're just against Donald Trump. I don't think that's a winning agenda in a midterm election. I think they have to have an agenda. They have to be willing to talk about it and give their candidates something to campaign for.
And, of course, one of the things that they're going to be taking to voters, we just heard from Congressman Paulson, is this tax bill that it looks like is likely to pass next week. How popular is that likely to be with Minnesota voters? Our last poll on that showed that voters were a little suspect of it.
I don't think this tax bill is going to operate exactly like Representative Paulson was selling it. I think it is going to be something that favors corporations and wealthy individuals. It's not going to be as beneficial to middle class and lower income Minnesotans, and I think they're going to figure that out.
It's kind of Republicans' job to make that case. Is it going to be difficult for them to do it?
I think one of the things we're going to see is a boom in employment and a boom in wages, and that's one of the things after the last Great Recession we've been needing. We need people to have more money in their pockets.
And final thing, the Michelle Fischbach situation. Again, one problem's been solved, another one's been created. Brian, have you ever seen anything quite like this? Even in Minnesota politics, with all the stuff we have going on, we've never seen something quite like this.
I've never seen anybody try to hold two offices at the same time. I think that's a very creative and incorrect interpretation of how the Constitution works.
Your thoughts?
It'll be interesting to see if the Attorney General weighs in on this or if she takes a pass on this one like she did earlier this year when the governor asked for an opinion. I think it's going to end up in court, to be very frank.
Yeah, and aside from the Attorney General's opinion, do you think it's even possible? A lot of people say the Lieutenant Governor doesn't have a lot of duties anyway. They could probably do both jobs.
Well, I think we eliminated most of the Lieutenant Governor's responsibilities, which is why I felt confident to run for that 7 years ago. It's not a big job, and I think she could do both. And she's a very competent state senator. The state would be well served.
And, of course, in the past, Carol Molnau once was transportation commissioner for a time while being lieutenant governor. So we'll see what happens there. Annette and Brian, thanks for being here. Appreciate it. Face Off is next with Catherine Tanucci and Andy Brehm. We'll be back in 2 minutes. And welcome back. Time now for Face Off. Joining me today, Catherine Tanucci and Andy Brehm. Thank you both for being here. Let's start by talking about the tax bill. You heard Congressman Paulson here touting all of the benefits that he thinks will flow to taxpayers across this great land of ours. Catherine, I imagine you see this a little differently.
I remain skeptical of what the congressman claims. There's a lot that we don't know about this tax bill still, and I think that goes to its unpopularity in part. And further, what we do know is that it's going to be a great benefit for corporations who are sitting on a lot of money already that has not trickled down to higher wages and more jobs. And it will also benefit the wealthiest Americans at the cost of middle-class families. I think that is, you know, the small tweaks that we saw in the final compromise are fine, but they don't change the fact that this is going to benefit the richest Americans and hurt middle-class Americans.
But Congressman Paulson is convinced that corporations are going to spend this money, reinvest it in their businesses, add jobs. I think he said 20,000 in Minnesota, and boost wages. Is that going to happen?
Well, a couple things. First of all, change is always generally unpopular, and the tax code can be complicated. But you're exactly right. Corporations are sitting on a lot of cash that's not within our borders, and that's because we have a terribly uncompetitive tax code. So this is totally common sense to make us competitive with the world, to create incentives for companies to bring that cash back to the United States and make investments here. Right now, accountants will tell a lot of corporations, don't bring your cash back here. It doesn't make sense. You know, those are a lot of good Democratic talking points. We need simplicity in the tax code. It hasn't been looked at for over 30 years. So these are all common sense solutions that it's going to benefit everybody, and that's a good thing.
Let's talk about the choice of Tina Smith for the U.S. Senate. She'll be in the office until, I think, a year from January, but she'll be running for the office outright in November of 18. Is she going to be a strong candidate?
Absolutely. She has already shown herself to be a tremendous elected official, serving Minnesotans as lieutenant governor. She has visited greater Minnesota. She has met people. She is well-liked by a lot of Minnesotans. She's going to make a tremendous senator, and she is going to be a formidable candidate. And the response that she's gotten already has been just really positive. People are excited to see her and have her represent us, and I expect she'll be a phenomenal candidate.
I think for the first time since the 90s, we're going to see abortion be a big issue, because she did used to work for Planned Parenthood. I'm certain Republicans are going to make an issue out of that, especially in greater Minnesota, where Democrats have struggled.
Well, I don't think it's – first of all, I think Tina Smith is a nice person. But just because you like somebody doesn't mean they should be a U.S. senator. I wish her well in fulfilling this term. But, yes, abortion will be an issue because it's been a big part of her life. And it's something that people like me that are pro-life, that care a lot about protecting the unborn, are going to have a problem with. So this state is not as far left and as blue as I think Tina Smith is. So I think it'll be an extremely competitive race.
Somewhat tied into this is the Roy Moore, Doug Jones election. A lot of Democrats said, look, at this shows we can win anywhere if we can win in Alabama. Seems to me that's only true if all the Republican candidates are suspected pedophiles, because that was the case in Alabama.
Well, I don't know that that was the case with those particular candidates, but when you look at other recent elections in Virginia, in New Jersey, Democrats, progressive liberal Democrats, are running and winning, and I expect that'll be the case again in 2018.
10 seconds.
Roy Moore was a disaster, and it is a good lesson that we shouldn't take any more advice from Steve Bannon, so I'll leave it at that.
And frankly, a lot of Republicans are glad that Roy Moore lost. Oh, he would have been an albatross for them in the 2018
many,
elections.
Many reasons. Count me as one of them.
Andy and Catherine, thanks for being here. Appreciate it. We'll be back in 90 seconds. Well, here's something you don't get to see every day. A professional hockey team taking the ice outdoors in Minnesota. On Wednesday, the Toronto Maple Leafs held their afternoon skate outside at the Landmark Center in downtown St. Paul. They played 3-on-3 hockey with several fans stopping by to watch. By the way, the Wild shut out the Leafs Thursday 2-0. Maybe they should have played in.
Today, I'm here to tell you, you guys are the Super Bowl team.
And a big surprise this week for the Minneapolis North High Polars football team. The team was chosen by the Super Bowl host committee as the game's third team. They'll take part in a full dress rehearsal on the field at U.S. Bank Stadium the Friday before the game. They'll also get to attend the Super Bowl experience at the convention center. The Polars football coach, Charles Adams Jr., was also given 2 tickets to the Super Bowl. They are all winners today, no question about it. That's all the time we have for now. See you back here again next week for another edition of At Issue.